Lord Harold Emerson, or Harrow, as he was known by his family, had never expected his father's mantle to fall upon him so suddenly. At his death, the Earl of Anglesford had not yet attained 60 years of age. His health had been as good as that of most men. He could still jump a horse over a toll gate fence, still argue his way out of a visit to Almack's, and still drink lesser men under the table with a bottle of Madeira. Up until the stroke that incapacitated him in early January and proved fatal a few days later. Of his father's gambling, Harrow had slightly more cognizance than his mother. After all, one could not reach the ripe old age of 23 without knowing that one's father was a devil's hand with the cards. But the staggering amount of his father's gambling debt still came as a shock to the young man. "Good Lord," Harrow whistled loudly, and thrust his thumbs into the pocket of his waistcoat. "Are you certain that Godwin has a good grasp of the situation?" Lady Anglesford assured him that she'd never found their solicitor to be mistaken in matters of financial advice. If anything, the picture was probably far bleaker than he'd painted it. She buried her face in her hands. "Good Lord," Harrow repeated, evidently too overcome by the moment to think of a more original exclamation. When his mother took the opportunity to retire to her boudoir, however, he took the opportunity to pour himself some brandy, and the exclamations came thick and fast. "What are you damning so vigorously in here?" demanded Torrin, entering the drawing-room. The second son in the Emerson family, Torrin was 7 years Harrow's junior. Harrow was blonde like their mother, and tall like their father, but Torrin's features had a darker, more diminutive cast to them. While Harrow was enjoying his life as a young buck about town, Torrin was still finishing his studies at home. Briefly, Harrow relayed the news of their imminent impoverishment, and despite Torrin's younger years, the gravity of the situation was not lost upon him. "Good Lord," he echoed, pouring himself his own glass of stimulants. "And Warwick must be sold too." He tried to keep the tremble out of his voice, but the sloshing of the liquid in his glass betrayed him. Lady Anglesford was not the only person who felt a kinship with the hallowed earth of the Emerson home. "That's what Mama says Godwin says." Harrow sprawled dismally on the sofa with the loose limbs of a large feline. His hand clawed at his exquisitely arranged cravat until the folds were mussed beyond recovery. He had entirely forgotten about his plans to take his pair of blacks out for an afternoon drive in Hyde Park. He had entirely forgotten that a certain young lady was expecting to ride with him in his phaeton. "What are you going to do?" asked his brother's voice, breaking in on his reverie of self-pity. "Do?" Torrin stamped his foot defiantly. "Well, for heaven's sake, Harrow, you are the new Earl of Anglesford. You must do something to salvage the family fortune." "How the deuce am I supposed to scratch up a load of blunt that Papa spent 20 years throwing away?" Torrin paced the room, throwing out suggestions. "Borrow. I dare say our family credit is rather low with London moneylenders right now. Sell the family jewels. Godwin says they're already pledged as surety for some of Papa's debts." Torrin hesitated, then forged ahead. "Well then, there's no help for it. You'll have to marry an heiress, and a wealthy one at that." Harrow frowned and sat up straight on the sofa. "Impossible, and you know it."
"Is it? And do I?" questioned Torrin. "You're not currently betrothed."
"No," blustered Harrow, "but, and much as I hate to admit it, you've got the looks and the title and the ton to attract some Croesus for a father-in-law."
"Yes, but..."
"So really," said Torrin slowly, "there's nothing standing in the way of this plan except..."
"Except for the fact that Ida and I have an understanding." Harrow raked a large hand through his blonde hair. "I don't consider that nothing."
Torrin smiled wryly. "Ida's a sensible girl, Harrow. However serious your understanding, I'm sure she would quite readily understand that a blow of this magnitude must set everything on its head." He ignored his older brother's glare. "And perhaps she won't care tuppence for you any longer, once she hears what a poor devil you've become." He took half a dozen quick steps to the door of the drawing-room. "In fact, I've half a mind to break the news to her myself. Ida? Ida?" He darted out into the hallway, where a young lady in black walking dress was impatiently awaiting her escort for a promised drive in Hyde Park.